Matt George, live from the ABC 10 studio. Of course, he's the host of the Locked On Kings podcast as well. And Matt was a little fiery over the All-Star break, angering some Kings fans out there on Kings Twitter. What's the problem, Matthew?
I mean, I've done a complete – my heel turn is complete, Damian Barling. I went from the blind optimist that is only positive to a point where people hated me to now –
I'm sorry. Were you ever a babyface?
Oh, for sure. I just was the babyface that was like – that they were forcing on you. Like babyface Roman, they got booed all the
there
time.
There
like,
you
I was
go.
The babyface that the crowd didn't like.
Yeah.
I was like Cena getting booed with
Rocky Maya Villa.
Yeah. It was just the Cena sucks. That was me, but as a babyface.
Matthew sucks. Matthew
no,
sucks.
No,
die,
Matthew.
Die.
Next thing you know, Matt's going to join the Nation of Dominic.
The white guy version, though, right?
Well, you know there's a GIF that people use every time you come on our show. The kid in the wrestling crowd, the Nation of Domination comes out, and the kid sticks his fist up in the air.
That is
like, that's Matt George.
Oh.
You've never seen that GIF? Oh, I gotta find it for you. It's epic.
I don't know if I want to.
Everybody tag Matt in that GIF. Y'all know which one I'm talking about.
It's a classic
about.
One. It's a classic one. You'll good. Like it.
No, you'll laugh at it. Yeah. You're a wrestler. Okay. Man. You'll laugh at it. Oh,
yes.
I know you want to. I know we've got practice to talk about. I want to talk about Markelle Fultz, Zach LaVine, all of that. You were a little fired up at the start of the show.
No, you always piss me off because you have the best wrestling conversations when I'm not around. But, Ken, I would just want to say at the start of the show, Kenny is absolutely correct. WWE made made a mistake of going with Cody long-term as their champ because I used to at least, like, actively search out segments every single week just to see what's going on. I haven't done that in months, or I have zero interest in what's going on with the main title. I still have everything and every interest in what's going on with the bloodline with Roman, but nothing with Cody. So I just wanted to express that Casey was right.
No, spot on, Matt.
Okay, Casey's never right.
Well,
two, they messed up the booking of Cody Rhodes. There was nothing for him to sink his teeth into. All that he had was Roman. They never had anything past Roman. They went to Solo. Solo ain't it yet. Solo ain't even the one. Jacob's the one.
So, but I'll ask the question. Is that their fault or is that his fault?
No, that's their fault.
Well, with the true...
You can cook with the ingredients that are in front of you. I'm sorry I'm not hyped up for Cody Rhodes versus AJ Styles.
With the true champions, they're the main event.
See, I would argue that Roman was put up against a number of different people over the course of his title reign, and he made it interesting. He made it super compelling.
And what lingered in the background for a year?
The Rock.
The Rock?
What else lingered in the background for a
year? The fraction in the bloodline?
The bloodline. I'm talking about Cody.
Oh.
Which I was never a fan of Cody beating Roman to begin with, considering all the giants that Roman vanquished. Like if Lesnar couldn't beat Roman with multiple cracks at him, but Cody Rhodes can, I was never.
Oh, you're one of those guys. Oh.
I'm kind of a Cody hater. Like I've realized.
Oh, I had it noticed.
Oh,
I guess Cody's the Sacramento Kings right now, and I'm pessimistic Matt George that just hates on everything good going on. But yeah, I like Cody. I like his entrance. I think Cody is a heel I'm very interested in. But Cody carrying the company and Cody being the main event with the belt on him, it's not something I would do in GM mode on WWE 2K.
I'd turn Cody heel and keep it moving. That's what I'd do.
I'm into that.
I'm anxious to see what they do at WrestleMania because I still think the money is Cody Roman, but... I know nothing. I'm just a stupid radio show host talking about the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento, California, with a bunch
wearing
of Cody Rhodes haters.
They go home. You talk to somebody during the go home show.
What?
You talk to somebody during the go home show.
Well, we might.
That's what I'm saying.
Right, I do want to. Apparently, I want to talk to somebody named Ricky Saints. They destroyed a 2-year bit with one stupid ass name change. In any event, Matt George Kingsbury at practice today. You talked about Zach Levine. We just played maybe about a minute and a half of the Markelle Fultz audio, and it Markelle's demeanor really caught our attention. His demeanor, his delivery, he seems like he's pretty focused on the task at hand.
Yeah, I'll break the pessimistic character and say I really liked it. I really liked him. I was really impressed by him, and I found myself like I'm really rooting for this kid. Like, he's still got so much left. He's obviously had, from the number one overall pick to all the trials and tribulations he's faced to battling injury, right? Like, he's had a rocky road. It has not been a smooth career to this point. It's not the exact same because Malik wasn't the number one overall pick. But it kind of reminds me of Malik and trying to find your footing. And he found a little bit of something in Orlando and then dealt with his injury. So, hey, can Sacramento be the landing destination where he finds out kind of who he is? So I'm rooting for Markelle. I think Markelle can absolutely help the Sacramento Kings. They desperately need point guard and playmaking depth. And, I mean, he was wearing, not that this matters as much as it does during training camp, but he was wearing the white jerseys with the second unit, Jonas Valanciunas, Keon Ellis. So he's looked at with that second unit. I would be very surprised if he does not get some playing time or opportunity in this Warriors game. So I'm rooting for him, and I think he actually can be an impactful play. This is not just they took a flyer on some decently recognizably named free agent that isn't going to do anything for him. And it's not like no disrespect, it's not like a Jay Crowder thing. And I think Jay should have probably been playing more, but Jay at the kind of the sunset of his career, Markelle Fultz is what, 26? Mm-hmm. Like, he still has something that he can give. So I think I like the signing. I think Markelle Fultz can absolutely help this team. I'm realistic and it's not going to be a game changer, but give a little bit of a break to Malik Monk, or don't require Zach LaVine or DeMar DeRozan to be a point guard when Malik Monk is off the floor. Mm-hmm. Markelle Fultz can do that for you, and that's good enough in 10 to 12 minute stretches a night.
Yeah, I'm all for that, man. I think you get somebody like Markelle who, maybe with whatever happened in his career, became a little miscast as being the number one pick or a franchise guy. Like, he wasn't that, but you know, he might be a little overqualified to be somebody that can give you 10 minutes a night, you know, and because of that, give you a great 10 minutes as a backup point guard. So at the very least, man, I'm anxious and I'm interested to see what he can do with his time here in Sacramento.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good way to put it, Casey, is overqualified. Now, this is a results league, right? And that's one of the things I actually asked Markelle is, like, of course, you look at the Kings and they need depth at your position. Right. So you're obviously looking at that going opportunity, but you're also joining a team in the thick of a playoff race. Like, and as I was asking him this question, like, he started nodding and smiling, like, this is meaningful basketball. So not only is he returning, he's returning and is going to get a rotational spot on a team that needs to win right now. Like that, he said, that's everything you could ask for. That's everything you could dream of as a kid wanting to play. So he has the opportunity. Plus, we know Sacramento, and of course, Doug knows Sacramento. He plays hard, he makes an impact. Fans are going to embrace him immediately. Like, there's no reason to believe why that Markelle Fultz can't be a mainstay on this roster for the remainder of this season at least, and help this team hopefully fight into at the bare minimum a seventh or eighth spot, so the play-in is a little more appealing, or still make a push for a top six, which is still mathematically possible.
We kind of abandoned it there for a second, but you brought up Markelle and a position of need, not going to get a Twilight player. Like, you've got a player who could really help you. Mm. Is that your view, like, on the Kings, that you just feel like they don't have enough? They're just still missing at key positions to really kind of get them over the hump when, you know, maybe Phoenix has a run in them, maybe Golden State's got a little vibe and they're getting better, and the Kings just don't have those things right now?
It's actually kind of, in a weird way, like the opposite. I think the Kings have more than enough. Hmm. I just don't think it's cohesive. Like, it just doesn't, okay. I don't think it works. Like, they have plenty of talent. This is arguably, I know you lost De'Aaron Fox, but like, pound for pound, this might be a more talented overall roster than the Kings had when they made the playoffs 2 years ago. Like, you look at the talent across this roster, you look at the names, DeMar, former Hall of Famer, Zach LaVine, potential 30-point scorer, Keon Ellis has become, I think Keon Ellis is the best story of this Kings season again. Like, he's arguably been their most consistent player. Domantas Sabonis is still a super high end player. Get Keegan working a little bit more. Like, Malik is important now in his starting role. Like, this roster is loaded with talent that feels like you just picked a team at the YMCA. Like, that's when they play, I just feel like this is a team that's playing pickup together during the offseason that's just kind of feeling each other out. If we were game 15, I think I'd feel a little better about it. Mm. There's 27 games to go, and every single loss can be your backbreaker. Like, is this enough time? That's why I've always kind of rolled my eyes, and not to poo-poo on fans, but like, I've always kind of rolled my eyes at this. Once they get practice time, they were only able to have one practice during this All-Star break because of league rules and mandates. They all got back together yesterday, but didn't practice, just got together as a team. Today's their first practice. They play a game tomorrow. It's like, and that's it. Like, they're going to have small little opportunities to practice over the remainder of the season, but go and look at the schedule. They have a stretch in March coming up where they have three sets of back-to-backs over 12 days. Like, practice time, what are you talking about? It's recovery days and playing. That's pretty much what this is at this point. So this group is very much going to be a trial by fire, learn on the fly. Do they have the talent to do it? Yes. Have I seen enough to make me confident that they will be able to be cohesive enough to be effective against so many teams that, I mean, even though they're adding Jimmy Butler to the Golden State Warriors, that's still Warriors basketball with Steph Curry, Draymond Green. They still know their identity, right? This Kings team's still trying to find theirs. And I think 27 games is a tough ask to find that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair. I would say, not in defense of anybody, but just speaking about it, like you talk about, they look like a team that was just put together at the YMCA. That's almost because they were. Like, they just got put together like a right. week ago, and they're trying to, you know, figure some things out. And the idea of practice time, even if they don't, like, they'll have some practice time, but even if they didn't, if they played 10 games together as opposed to the three that we saw together, they're going to learn something about each other. They're going to learn and start to get a better feel of what's going on. And that's one of the things that I look at. I don't know if it's actually going to be enough or it's going to work, but just more games on the court together outside of three or four, you know, could lend itself to just better cohesion outside of practices. You know what I'm saying? Just continuing to play with each other for, you know, a week and a half straight, and you could see, you know, some better things as a group.
But what does that week and a half look like, though? I think that's the part that concerns me. Is should they be – there's 27 games left. 10 games from now, they should be a lot more comfortable playing together. But are those 10 games, are you 3-7? Because can you survive those 10 games in order to get more cohesive and get more comfortable together, especially with that stretch that I talked about coming up in March, right? That stretch of doom that starts with the Clippers and ends with a back-to-back between Boston and OKC. Like, it's brutal. The Bulls are the easiest team you face during that stretch. You should be able to beat them, but we've said should a lot with this Kings team over the years, right? Like, it's just a very brutal stretch. When they come out of that stretch, they should be battle-tested. They should be more comfortable playing together. They'll have more games under their belt. All these things can be true, but they also might be barely clinging on to the 10th seed with the the Spurs are might probably out of it now, so that helps them a little bit. But the Suns might be breathing down their necks, right? Portland is playing really good basketball right now. I know Ayton's out for an extended period of time, but what if Portland wakes up and says, hey, let's go for it? Like, I don't know if the Kings can afford the growing process together. Now, in theory, though, Casey, you get through 27 games. Let's say you tread water. Let's say you finish in the 9th seed. You host that first play-in game because it might be the Warriors again. Who knows? Mm-hmm. By that first play-in game, barring injury, this group should be a lot different than they are today. So maybe that's the optimistic way of viewing it. It's like they'll have 27 games under their belt. They get into the play-in. Now you can make a run, or towards the end of the season, if you end the final 10 games of the season playing good basketball to hit the play-in running, now maybe you're more cohesive. Now you're hitting your stride at the right time. I just don't know if they can survive to that point.
And to be fair to them, I know the opponents matter, but they're what, 3-2, 3-1? With like the whole group of LaRavia, Valanciunas, like they've, while they're trying to figure it out, they've won games.
Sure.
I know it doesn't feel that way because the last game they lost, but they're working it out on the fly, and they've won games. So.
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons it doesn't feel that way, too. I mean, Matt mentioned it. Like, Portland's five games worse than you. They're playing well. They were playing. I think they were on a 9 of 10 winning streak. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were on maybe it was like a 9-game winning streak. It was something. They had won games, though, when they played Sacramento and then the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. Like, you lost to two teams who are below you in the conference standings. There aren't very many teams that are below you in the conference standings. You lost to two of them. So, yeah, it's 3-2, but I think Kings fans might look at that and go, God damn it, this looks familiar.
And I'm trying not to overreact to one loss because it's 1 of 82. But that loss going into the All-Star break, I think, could really haunt this team. Because you're looking at out of the All-Star break, I don't have the schedule up in front of me, but you have the Warriors, you have Utah, and you have – who's the last one? It's a beatable team.
Is Charlotte?
It's on Monday.
Charlotte. So, I mean, if you win that Pelicans game, you're on a 4-game win streak. You win these three, you're on a 7-game win streak. We saw what a 7-game win streak could do standings-wise when Doug first took over, right? They shot up the standings in the West with that 7-game win streak. Mm-hmm. So if you win these three out of the break, which if you want any chance at a top six, I feel like you have to, you're feeling a lot better regardless of what happened in that final Pelicans game. But that what I've been talking to a lot of people and kind of what we've worked out, I had a conversation with Kyle Madsen about this on Locked on Kings a couple days ago. Like, this team, if they really, really want to make some noise, they need a win streak. And they had a chance at one, and they just dropped the ball in this game that, like, James Hamm has put this well, too. Like, optically and standings-wise, 1 game over .500 versus 3 games over .500 starting this final stretch, that's a massive difference. Mm-hmm. So I just hope we don't get to a point where we get to the end of the season, Kings are in 9th or 10th, and they're a game out of 8th or a game out of 7th, and we're going, hey, remember that one? Oh, and remember that one? Because that's what we did a lot last year with that Detroit loss at home and the Charlotte loss and the Wizards loss. Like, that, those kill you. And the Kings got to be able to handle their business, because now they're forced to try and go out and get those games against OKC and Boston, and they might have to win, especially the home games, they might have to win half of them in order to truly have a chance.
If I told you, Matt, the Kings turn things around here in the next 27 games, and whether that means a 7th spot or better, what do you think happened? Like, if I give you the end scenario, and this team got the 7th spot, and like, they only have to win one play-in game to get into the playoffs, what happened in that time frame to make that possible?
Two things instantly come to mind. Number one is Keon Ellis starts, I think. And that helps clean up the first quarter issues, but I think that's less likely. Number two is I think Zach LaVine takes off. Like Zach LaVine, what we saw that the final game of the season, the final game before the All-Star break, there was so much in that to be positive about, right? Like, Zach LaVine, not only was he scoring, he had 32, 34, 10 assists. Right. So it's like, oh, there's Zach. There's that game. And the way it ended with DeMar taking a billion shots down the stretch that just didn't need to happen.
Not a big DeMar DeRozan fan, huh?
No. We're not going to do that, because in Dallas, he won you the game because of that. And in many ways, the game, like, there's a game before that against the Pelicans that he was clutching as well. So I'm not saying DeMar can't shoot those shots. That's why he's here. Like, give him the ball in those spots. But if you're missing 3 or 4 in a row and you've got a guy who has 30 next to you and is shooting really well, hey, maybe give that guy the ball or let him touch it more than a second in a possession. That's just my 2 cents on that situation, which to me is an impossible thing to ask of an interim head coach. But that's where Doug Christie's got to go. DeMar, love you, my man, but let's move the ball around a little bit. Like, we trust you. You're our closer. But if you don't have it, another guy can take a shot. That's how talented this roster is. And I asked Doug about that at practice today, not directly like, hey, would you have taken DeMar off the floor for Keon Ellis or anything like that, but kind of alluded to, you've got a lot of talent on this roster. Only 5 guys can play, and some of the guys that are on the bench closing think that they should be on the floor or could help you by being on the floor. Keon is the obvious one that comes to mind. And he basically, like, he essentially what he said is, like, I'm going to do what's necessary to win basketball games. Like, if this is how we need to, if this is how I think we need to win games, if this guy coming off the bench or this guy moving out of the starting lineup or this guy not being on the floor to close games so that Keon can be on or whoever can be on, like if that helps us win basketball games, that's what we're going to do. And Zach LaVine kind of chimed in because I asked him a similar question. And Zach basically said, look, like I've always been on the floor at the end of games. I expect to be on the floor. It's what I do. But he said, as long as we're winning games, we'll do what needs to happen. But he threw in that caveat right at the end. Like, these guys aren't going to be cool with Zach LaVine being off the floor so Keon Ellis can play. And then they lose. Like, Doug's going to have to wear that. And the players aren't going to be happy about that. So it's a very difficult spot for an interim head coach to be in. If Doug has to look at DeMar and say, dude, we got to sit you down because Keon's cooking. He did that, like, in the Pelicans game. I'm pretty sure it was the Pelicans game in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. He did that for one possession. And DeMar gave him a little bit for it. And before that, Malik had been out of the game for like 5 straight minutes. And I'm watching Malik on the bench, and he's sitting there leaned over, staring at Doug the entire time. Like, call me in. I'm ready to go. Put me back in. Like, it's the hard part of the job is managing the egos. There's so much talent on this roster that all these guys expect to be on the floor to close the game. So you have to find the right combination that more often wins you. So I guess that'll be my long-winded answer to your question, D'Lo. Doug finds that right combination that wins him games or reacts to each game appropriately and makes the right choice for that given circumstance.
Okay. I don't think it plays out that way. I don't think Doug Christie is that type of player. I don't think DeMar DeRozan, and what I'm talking about is like
type of coach.
Yeah, excuse me, type of coach. And I don't think any of those players would look at DeMar DeRozan and say, "Hey, man, pass the ball, my guy." Like, I've said it before. They're gonna say, "You've done this a dozen times this year. You've got an open shot. Take the shot. We believe in you."
In win now games in a playoff race, if DeMar does the exact same thing another couple times over the next couple weeks, like somebody's got to speak up, and hopefully it's Doug.
True, but my whole point is it hasn't happened a couple of times. It happened once, and people were like, "Man, DeMar always doing this and that." No, he doesn't. Like the more times, like I said, I can count 10 times this season when he's shot the ball like that in the clutch and they've won. How many times has he shot the ball like that in the clutch and they've lost? Like it happened in New Orleans. It doesn't. He's allowed a time when it doesn't work. You know what I mean? So, before we're like, you got to pass the ball, man.
So let's change the conversation then, because I don't think it's DeMar's the most recent example because of what happened, but it's not a DeMar thing. Again, it's who is the right choice to come out on that given night if you need Keon in there to close games or you need somebody else in there to close games, right? Sometimes it might be Keegan, although I think that lineup is too small defensively. If you're trying to get Keon in there, you're obviously trying to get stops down the stretch. Plus, he might be hitting threes like we saw in that first New Orleans game. So the last game, I felt that LaVine was cooking. You probably should have had Keon in there on CJ. DeMar needed to be the guy that was taken.
Keegan needed to go.
Okay, well, then maybe if you're undersized, then Keegan's the guy in that spot. Either way, offensively, Zach LaVine should be touching the basketball in those spots. Like, that's just a one-game sample size. It doesn't mean that DeMar's bad at the job all of a sudden. Most of the time, it's going to be DeMar, and that's fine. But given that circumstance of a game that you really had to win, give the ball to freaking Zach LaVine. He's cooking. He also has 10 assists. And you went from, guys, 19 of the first 20 baskets the Kings had were assisted. They were carving the Pelicans up by passing the ball and moving the ball. Domantas Sabonis was feasting down low. And it's not that it's not that you need to go to that every time. They didn't try it once. Like, that's to me where it's like, again, I know DeMar's your closer in that moment, but why did you go away from what was working to give this guy the ball, and you're confident in him, but you lost the game it's one of the major reasons you lost the game. It's not fair to say it's DeMar DeRozan's fault, but maybe tomorrow against the Warriors, maybe DeMar's cooking, but the Kings can't stop Steph and Zach LaVine is struggling. Okay, Keon, Zach, you got to get on the bench, man. This is that moment. Like, that's the thing. I think DC has to find the confidence and the team has to believe in him enough to where if you need Keon on the floor in those moments, you need to find the right guy to take out. And I feel more often than not, it's going to be a choice of your backcourt, Malik, Keon, or excuse me, DeRozan or LaVine. And all three of those guys expect to be on the floor in those spots. And all three of them probably aren't going to take kindly to being taken out. But will you make the right choice on that given night to win that basketball game?
Real quick, Dan, I just want to say one thing. So Keon, we all love him as a defender, and we just love him as a player. He wasn't stopping CJ that night. He wasn't hitting no shots. But we want him in there because we trust him, right? That's the same thing that happens on offense. CJ was going crazy on Keon. But we want him in the game, and we want him guarding him because we trust him. That's the same thing with DeMar DeRozan. He wasn't hitting nothing. But you want him taking them shots because we trust that. That's the only point I would make. That's what happens from time to time. You get these guys in there, even if they're not on their game that night, and you keep them in there because you trust them.
I hear exactly what you're saying. My counter to that is this team has a lot more scoring options than they do defensive options. And you have two guys on this roster that you really can feel confident in defending. And look, CJ was cooking 100%, but I don't think Keon Ellis would have left CJ as open on a couple. Like, CJ had a pull-up three in transition where there wasn't a dude within 5 feet of him. You think Keon is letting him comfortably walk up the floor like that? Like, that's my point. And maybe Keegan should have. So maybe it's on Keegan has to wear part of it too, 100%. But like I think you could have gotten away with trusting Zach offensively in that game and having Keon on the floor to help you a little bit defensively to try and slow CJ or at least make the guy work a little bit harder than he was working down the stretch. It's hindsight 2020. They lost the game. It sucks. This is how Doug Christie's going to be judged through the remainder of this game. And so many of these games have been such close games, regardless of the competition, especially against teams like Boston and OKC and the Knicks who are going to be coming through town. Like, if you have a chance to win that game late, you got to go and get it. And maybe that might include making the tough decision of who comes out so Keon can be in, or Keon, you're out so our closers can close. Like, somebody's going to be pissed off, but they have to win the game.
Yeah, the tough part about, like, listening to you break all that down, Matt, and I don't disagree with anything either of you said in that regard, to be honest with you. It also brought to reality the difficult position that Doug Christie is in.
Yes.
Doug Christie is being asked to make decisions in his 30th game as a head coach that there are coaches who have been doing this for 10 years don't make or can't make or are unwilling to make. And that's a tough spot for Doug to be in because this may not necessarily be Doug's only shot at being an NBA coach, an NBA head coach. But right now, this minute, is Doug's shot at being an NBA coach. And there's not a lot of room for error, especially when you got a front office that is, you know, they're kind of on the edge of the cliff of being, you know, the next Sacramento regime to go. Like, they're right there standing there at the end. And ironically, the guy who could probably prevent that from happening the most is Doug Christie.
I remember Mike Brown talking a lot about Keegan, his rookie year. And he talked about how Keegan is doing something that no other rookie is doing. He's expected to be a high impact player on a winning basketball team as a top pick, right? Most top typically on bad basketball teams and can kind of ease their way in and get the green light to shoot 20 times. And who cares? You're on a bad team, but just get your feet wet. Keegan wasn't allowed to do that. He'd come in, be a high impactful starter on a playoff team, even though you were the fourth overall pick. Exact same thing can be said about Doug Christie. A lot of interim head coaches take over a team after there's a firing midseason. Typically, that team is drastically underperforming and is bad. Now, there's been exceptions like Ty Lue, for example, of course. But Doug is being thrust into a position where not only is he trying to win to secure his job, not only are the players on this roster trying to win, not only is the front office trying to win to preserve their jobs, like, there is a mandate from ownership. There is a mandate from this city to be competitive again consistently. Like, we ain't going back to that playoff drought. And Doug Christie knows that very, very well, right? He understands it as being a part of the last great teams that were here in Sacramento. I appreciate the hell out of Doug for the circumstance that he's been put in. And he is taking the player motivator approach. And we've all experienced Doug Christie, the speaker, whether it was publicly or privately. And we know how you listen to every word he says, and every word he says is he meticulously chooses. He doesn't waste words, right? Mm-hmm. Doug says what he means and he wears his heart on his sleeve, which is what this city loves about him so much. So it's in a weird way. It's like, it's not a position I envy anybody in. But if there is anybody I want in this position, Doug Christie's got to be towards the top of that list, right? So it just added to the list of reasons to root for this team. Hey, even if pessimistic heel Matt George over here is not a believer in the team, and I stand by, I just don't believe this group. I don't believe in the future that this organization has built for themselves. I think there are a lot of hard questions and hard decisions are going to be had to made this summer. But for these final 27 games, this is what it is, right? And I'm skeptical, but we're here for the ride. And hopefully this team, if this team can do it, they've got the talent to do it. It would be an amazing story for Doug Christie. And there's part of me that wouldn't be surprised if Doug Christie is able to pull it off. Not the Kings. Doug Christie is able to pull it off. So now we kind of go along for the ride.
All right. We're back at it tomorrow. We were kind of started the conversation, really never really like dived into it. You think tomorrow dove into it?
Dove.
Dived. Yeah, dived is not a word.
Dove.
Yeah. It's like Bret Hart. Tomorrow night's a big game, right?
I mean, every game from here on out is a big game, but that's a cop-out. But yes.
Sure. You've got a chance to win the season series against the team that you're tied with right now.
On your home floor,
yeah.
Too. Like, just get it done. Get it done. Win this game on your home floor. It's your first crack, too. Like, you're 2-0 up on the Warriors, but you're not 2-0 up on this version of the Warriors, right? Yeah. If they come in with Jimmy Butler and you beat him and go 3-0 up, you're a little less worried, right? Because even if they lose, like they lose tomorrow night, we're still 2-1 up in the series. Yeah, but you're now a game behind them in the standings. Tiebreaker only matters if you tie with them, not behind them.
Right.
So this is a massive game, plus just to build momentum for yourself. Like I'm knocking on all wood and not trying to speak this into existence at all, because believe it or not, I don't want the team to fail. But if you
not what the internet said, not what the internet said.
Boy, don't go on King's Reddit.
Never
but
have.
But if
never
it's good for you.
Wouldn't know how to find it.
My idiot friends from college take screenshots and send it to me because they think it's funny. But like, if you go out against this Warriors team, given all the circumstances, starting these final 27 games, and you lay an egg, like morale wise, that's going to hurt. I know the fan base is going to react poorly to that, but this game should 100% be competitive. I expect the Warriors to look different, but we also don't know what the hell the Warriors are. They change every freaking quarter, let alone every game. So go out and win that game, right? Just go out and win it. Get a step forward in the right direction. These first three games are very important, because then you have the stretch of doom in March coming up.
Mm. Yeah, got to be ready to go out there and win games regardless of how long you've been on the same team. If you know your teammate's name or not, any of that, you got to go out there and find a way to win games. And we'll see if this group can do it. We'll see if they do. I think they got a better chance than maybe most people think they do. But the only thing that matters is wins and losses at this point.
And that was kind of what Doug said in practice today, right? It's this is the time of the year where we're going to play our brand of basketball. We're going to play hard and like this, the teams that get going, it's not at this time of year, it's not because they're amazing basketball teams and everything's been going right this season. It's just you start playing basketball at the right time and see things start clicking at the right time. So, hey man, 2 years ago, the Kings came out of the All-Star break red hot and it secured them a third seed. And we have to remember the context of that, because that was right after the trade deadline where all the Kings did is go out and get Kessler Edwards. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that in a negative way. I actually thought and I defended that move by Monty McNair completely. Ride with this unit. They've gotten you this far. And I remember other teams were making moves and the fan base was feeling like, oh God, the Kings are in this spot, but all these sharks are circling, all these teams with experience are circling. They made some moves. Like the Kings are going to have to fight hard to hold on to this spot. They came out of the All-Star break, I think won 7 of 10. And at that point, like top four was pretty much solidified. Mm-hmm. You get hot right now, a lot can change and you can secure your spot. And the Kings are right in it. That's all they can ask for is a chance. Just make sure you control your own destiny. Don't leave it up to Minnesota winning or losing, or this team winning or losing, the Suns winning or losing, to get in or to get to the spot you want. Go out and get it yourself.
All we heard from that is Matt is a corporate stooge.
Oh man,
it's just all Monty was great. Kessler Edwards, all we needed to do.
I can't win.
Stooge Matt George McStooge.
No, you sound like the internet.
Oh, I got that from King's Reddit.
Oh,
you found
that's
it.
The tamest thing.
You found
that's
King's
the tamest
Reddit.
Thing
no.
Find.
I don't imagine it would be that difficult. Let's. I just search Kings Reddit. Kings Reddit. Matt. I stay off of Reddit. That feels like a dark. Oh,
I've never been on anything.
The first thing that pops up is Matt George rant. This is gonna be good. Shout out to this guy. He says he sticks to the insiders and D'Lo and KC.
Oh, big ups to him. Maybe Reddit isn't so bad after all.
I just think about his Bagley song. He's just too inflammatory and reactionary. He's either being overly optimistic or pessimistic. And then someone follows up. Yeah, that's this sub in a nutshell after every win or loss. Matt used to be positive. His Locked On pod used to be so good.
It still is.
Now it's just always scripted the same and ads.
Oh, come on.
That's true. That part's true.
Now, I'm scared to death to do this.
No, here's what you do. You want some good nightly reading, keep going. From the off season, there's a Matt George appreciation post where someone posted something really nice about my content during the off season, and the entire comment section is like, yeah, he still sucks.
Oh, this King's Reddit.
Well, how about this guy? Keep an eye on D-Lo and KC to share more context about Fox's departure.
Here we go.
Huh?
I'm leaving.
Oh, these guys suck. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't say that. If we scroll long enough, it probably will. great stuff, Matt, as always.
You still reading from King's Reddit?
No, I'm gonna. No, those were my own thoughts. I'm closing Reddit forever. That world does not belong to me. We'll be looking forward to Kings basketball returning and more Locked On content, and of course your great stuff over there at ABC 10.